Yes, Andy Beshear's race really turned on abortion. Moved people to vote on abortion access, where our Attorney General Daniel Cameron was one of the most restrictive attorney generals, similar to Ken Paxton on abortion, and people turned out against him on abortion.
We have to leave it there. Tamara Weider, Kentucky State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates, wearing a pin that says, bans off our bodies, and Dr. Bhavik Kumar, family medicine physician and abortion provider in Texas.
Hey, everyone. I'm Shay from Planned Parenthood. Here are some fast facts about abortion. Abortion is really common. Chances are you know someone who's had an abortion. In the United States, about 1 in 4 women will have one by the age of 45. Abortion is extremely safe. Abortion is safer than getting your tonsils out or your wisdom teeth pulled. And abortion doesn't increase your risk of cancer, infertility, mental health issues, or any other health problems. The majority of people who get abortions are already parents. 59% of people who have had abortions have had at least one childbirth experience. Most people in the U.S. think abortion should be legal by a wide margin. 80% of Americans want abortion to remain legal, even in states where politicians pass laws against abortion. For more information, visit PlannedParenthood.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet on WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, time for another edition of Off the Wall. And very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on the this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
We're doing a little studying, Kyle, and I realize that, you know, if we don't let the entire 20-minute-long theme play and we start talking earlier, we have more time to talk.
Is that, did you employ subtraction?
I did a little bit of mathematics, yes. I had my calculator, scientific calculator. And, yeah, the numbers stand up to scrutiny. I even went into the math department at Stony Brook, had some professors look it over. Boy, I got some funny looks. But yeah, we would have significantly more time if we started talking earlier.
Well, I'm happy to talk now.
Well, we usually come in at this break point, I think right about here. Right there is where we usually come in.
Well, a little after.
So. No, right about here is where we usually fade in, and I start the whole thing saying, it's another edition of Off the Wall, yeah. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
And we continue from that point.
Yeah, we just carry on.
Wait a minute. We haven't gained anything because we talked about it the whole time. All right. There's always next time. All right, so welcome, everybody. It's another edition of Off the Wall, the show that I find really hard to describe, and most other people do as well, even when they write angry letters. Some breaking news. This actually just happened an hour or so ago, a couple hours ago. Well, sometime today, anyway. The top court in New York State today has ordered the state's congressional map to be redrawn. That gives Democrats a huge win in a case that could impact the balance of power in Congress. This is what we've been waiting for. You know, it's the 2022 losses, especially in Long Island area, would have been affected by a map that was drawn like most states draw their maps. It's not necessarily a fair system, but if Democrats are in control of one state, well, I guess they get to decide. And if Republicans are in control of another state, they get to decide. And that's how the system works. Unfortunately, it didn't seem to work that way for the Democrats for some reason, as they had a court rule against them. But now, the State Court of Appeals, 4-3 decision, said districts drawn just last year by a court-appointed specialist were a short-term fix and now can be discarded. The existing judicially drawn congressional districts are limited to the 2022 election, said Chief Judge Rowan Wilson. The court, agreeing with a Democratic-driven lawsuit, said the map-making process should begin again with the state's bipartisan redistricting panel, and the state legislature should have final say. The Democrats have overwhelming control of the state legislature, and that gives the party the potential power to tweak lines to make swing districts they lost in 2022, especially on Long Island and in the Hudson Valley, more favorable to their candidates. Now, you're going to hear a lot of Republicans complaining about this, but keep in mind what I said earlier. This is how the system works. You know, you don't like it? Well, change the whole system. But don't have one set of rules apply for Republicans and something else apply for Democrats. This is the system. You support it in other states when they gerrymander. You got to support it here as well.
Totally. This sounds like a just correction from what we were fearing was going to be something that just seemed so backwards, mm-hmm. because of the way the system was being employed for one or the other party, and it should be expected that it's going to be played this way. And if it wasn't, it would have been a real tragedy, because those are the terms that are the campaigns were working through, and
these redrawing of districts, they occur after the census, which happens every 10 years. So this occurred after 2020. Now, what most of it was doing was simply, I guess the right word is correcting what Republicans did 10 years before that in 2010. I believe that's the year or thereabouts. And so it wasn't as if Democrats were taking more than they had before. They were simply restoring it to the way it was before Republicans changed it. But we can go back and forth as to who did what first. Again, this is the system, and for once the system seems to be working in the favor of Democrats. So we'll see if that actually makes change. But it's a good day. It's a good day for Democrats, I think, at least in New York State.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what those elections, what those seats end up, how they change, what the communities and what is affected, what gains materialize as a result of it having been corrected in this way.
Now, we talked about the hearings in front of Congress last week, just in passing, because they had just happened literally the same day as our show last week. Of course, everybody in the country is now talking about those hearings because of what came out of them. I got to say, college presidents sometimes can be idiots. I mean, there's just no question about it. You had three college presidents there on the floor being questioned by ultra-right-wing Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. I'll get it. Stefanik. Yeah. Well, they intentionally mispronounced the vice president's name, so, but I really don't know how to pronounce
Stefanik.
It. Stefanik. Okay. Whatever. The super right wing and, very pro Trump. And it seemed like it was such an easy question to answer. It really did seem like an easy question. I have the exact question. Here it is. I got the exact question here. This pertains to Harvard. At Harvard, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no? Now, obviously, the answer is yes. You know, calling for genocide of anyone violates rules. I mean, how does it not? And instead, the answer that the president of Harvard gave, in her case, Harvard president Claudine Gay, and two other presidents gave similar answers. She said it can be depending on the context, and basically did not give a yes or a no, did not sound strong, and gave a huge win to the ultra-right-wing congresswoman from upstate New York. Now, maybe it's important to understand what was going on there in context, because there was a whole hearing that surrounded that question. And before that question, the presidents had been asked told that students going around saying words like intifada or from the river to the sea, those phrases were calls for the genocide of Jews, which was news to me because, you know, I've heard the word intifada for decades now, and I only recently found out about the other meaning to from the river to the sea. It sounds like a good chant, but I don't know anybody who has used those words that also is for genocide of anyone or even violence against people based on their race, religion, or national origin. Not aware of any connection between that. But what the congresswoman was doing was establishing that connection early on, saying intifada equals pushing for genocide. From the river to the sea, you're basically saying exterminate the Jews. Now, college president, if somebody calls for the extermination of the Jews, is that a violation? Now, what the college presidents heard was, is using the word intifada, is using the phrase from the river to the sea, these seemingly innocuous chants. Do I want to go on record as saying that, yes, those violate the code of conduct at my university? Because this congresswoman has established that A equals B. So it put them in a very awkward position. Now, you know, what I would have done, had I been up there and been asked that question, I would have said, well, what do you define? Can you give me an example of how somebody on campus would be calling for the genocide of the Jews? Saying intifada? No, that's not a violation at all. You mean somebody standing and openly saying, I call for the genocide of the Jews? Yes, quite obviously. You know, establish your parameters. Be clear, Congresswoman, because you're not making a whole lot of sense here. You know, when I heard the story, you know, in the early days, I just I was very curious, where are these calls for the extermination of Jews happening? Who is doing that? Who is saying that? Show me a clip. Show me something. I'm not saying there is not anti-Semitism. Yes, there is an awful lot of it on the right and the left. And it does have to be dealt with. People say horrible things, sometimes out of ignorance, sometimes out of hatred. Keep in mind, you know, we live in a time now where anything you say can be broadcast to the entire world. When I went to college, people said stupid things all the time. But nobody outside the people they were standing near heard them. Now, those same stupid things can be said by people of a similar mentality, and now they're called to account for it from people all over the planet. So, we haven't changed. Technology has changed. The playing field has changed. So, let's establish our terms and be very clear.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great point, though, the way that the playing field for certain types of speech has changed, and that that these things being equated, especially in a situation where you are in like a wartime environment, and people are in a place in their lives of growth, so they're being exposed to ideas. I mean, these are young adults. They're not people who have lived a life. They don't have haven't had as much time and experience and are there to be confronted with diverging opinions
and to be manipulated as well.
Well, and be wrong and this environment should have some sort of protection, but there's limits to that. And I mean, clearly identifying hate speech and stuff that is directed,
right?
Even if it's, I mean, the insinuation could be there, but in the context of a large group of people, a phrase like that could mean a lot of different things because not everyone has a clear common understanding of it.
Right.
But there's limits to that too, because the context of certain groups who are known and to be very clear and upfront about their violent tendencies, saying the same thing could be taken at their word because of their renown. And so,
Yeah, most definitely.
It's a complex thing for a leader of a learning institution to confront. They personally, you know, speaking for the university, they might not be well equipped.
They were the wrong people to ask, I think, because they're trying to be an administrator. They're trying to be academic. They're trying to be quote unquote fair to all sides. It's a tough job. There's no question. A university these days, because, you know, everyone's always, you know, calling for blood. People need to step back a little bit, you know, and listen to the other side and have a conversation. But, you know, when we're talking about equating phrases and words to something that suits your agenda, it doesn't mean everybody else has to go along with that. And that's something that I don't think was challenged enough.
And think about what the people asking the question, they have to answer to a certain audience that already sort of inherently supports them. The educators, they have to answer to people this very specific question to people that will have a wide variety of opinions, and some maybe someone's always going to be quite upset.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to like represent that idea. I don't know. I sure as hell don't know like what of those phrases are exactly right.
But that's a great beginning point, what you just said. I don't know, you know. I don't know all the facts here. And, you know, this was the first time I ever heard the word intifada basically tied to wishing genocide on someone. To me, I always saw it as a way of resisting oppression, a way of throwing stones at tanks, which is something that, you know, you can get thrown in prison for that in Israel. If you're standing on your own land and throwing stones at an oncoming tank that's heading towards you, prison. You know, Not to focus on one side more than another, but during the recent exchange of prisoners and hostages, Israel arrested more people than they released. You know, imagine if Hamas had taken more hostages while they were releasing hostages, we'd all be talking about that. I'm not equating the two. It's a very different dynamic, but, you know, it does mean something. You know, when one side is basically acting against another side, while there's supposedly a temporary halt to hostilities, it's something that should be noted at least. And yeah, and also when people were being released, Israel is there forbidding them from celebrating. I mean, come on, this is insane. This is just not right. These are human beings. They're not being treated as such. And the whole world is seeing this. Unfortunately, a lot of us here are not. And that's got nothing to do with what happened on October 7th. Nothing at all.
Yeah, the willful blindness is astonishing.
Well, anyway, today, Harvard President Claudine Gay was told she can stay in office after getting support from the highest governing body at her school. In this tumultuous and difficult time, we unanimously stand in support of President Gay, the Harvard Corporation said in a statement. Gay and the presidents of MIT and the University of Pennsylvania have been under intense criticism since last week when they each testified before Congress about anti-Semitism on college campuses. So, it's good that at least some people are standing behind this president of a university because, you know, it's obvious what she meant or what she didn't mean. And to simply jump on somebody in front of Congress like that and basically push them into saying the wrong thing or not saying the right thing quickly enough, yeah, it doesn't seem kosher to me, to coin a phrase. Okay, let's turn the tables. All right, let's put that congresswoman on the stand. Is that what it's called in front of Congress?
Is it like
on the floor on the stand? What is it?
It's leading a witness, right?
Yeah, I'll definitely leading a witness.
Right?
Absolutely.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm on this show.
Yeah, but neither is she.
I'm a part-time.
She might be a lawyer. I don't
like
know.
Out of the trunk of your car lawyer, but yeah, it's like he's leading a leading question.
Let's do this, okay? Representative Stefanik, or whatever your name is. Okay, well, put your hand down. This is in the courtroom.
What?
Although, do they swear in? Do they have to
stand up?
Say, I'll swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Okay, whatever.
Dang old truth.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions here, all right?
Yes,
I'm not your honor. Let's take this seriously, all right? This is important.
Dishonor.
Does Israel have the right to defend itself? Now, answer the way that you would imagine she would answer. And as you know, Kyle, the clock is ticking.
Wait,
so.
As Stefanik?
As the conservative congresswoman from upstate, if I asked, does Israel have the right to defend itself, yes or no, what would she say?
Of course it does.
Yes, okay.
In fact,
Next question. Do Israelis have the right to defend themselves? Individual people. Got to move faster than
sure,
this.
Yeah,
okay.
All the
Thank
time.
You.
Yeah.
Okay, do Palestinians have the right to defend themselves? And this is the checkmate moment, because no matter what you say, you can only say two things, Kyle. You can only say yes or no. Say one. Pick one. Go ahead. Quickly.
Sometimes.
No.
No,
oh,
yes.
You're not being cooperative here.
Yes.
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 Palestinians have the right to defend themselves. So you basically are agreeing that they have the right to throw stones at tanks and to fight back against Israeli troops that are kicking in their doors and to shoot them if necessary to defend themselves. You support the Intifada. You support genocide. See, I got her there.
Fighting
I got
does
her there.
Involve...
Now say the other answer.
I can't. No.
No, Palestinians don't have the right to defend themselves? So
no,
what are you saying?
They should
Israelis can defend themselves, Palestinians cannot. So Palestinians are some subhuman race that don't have the right to even live their lives, that they just have to accept whatever kind of oppression comes their way? That's your official view, Congresswoman? Shame on you. Shame on you. All right. See, that's how you do it. The other thing, you know, that really bothers me when I see the news, I see people talking about this all the time, and I see Israeli representatives saying, yeah, but, you know, you don't criticize Hamas when they do this, or Hamas did this, and it's worse than what we did. Apparently they've forgotten something, all right? And let me remind them. Israel is a legitimate government, all right? Whether you agree with it or not, it's a legitimate government. It was elected, put in power, all right. Hamas is a terrorist organization. There's no comparison between the two. Israel, why are you comparing yourselves to a terrorist organization? You are held to a higher standard, all right? Yeah, we don't expect them to play by the rules. We expect you to. And the fact that you don't want to play by the rules, you don't want to follow international law, that is what the issue is right now. Yeah, we know what terrorism is. We know what terrorists do. It's an evil that has to be stopped. But you're not going to stop it by comparing yourselves to them, by acting like them, by being a little bit better than them, and thinking that that makes all the difference. So, that is an important point. Now, today, our president, Joe Biden, said that Israel is losing support over its indiscriminate bombing of Gaza, and that Benjamin Netanyahu should change, which basically exposes a new rift in relations with the Israeli prime minister. Biden's remarks, made to donors to his 2024 re-election campaign, was his most critical to date of Netanyahu's handling of Israel's war in Gaza. They're a stark contrast to his literal and political embrace of the Israeli leader days after Hamas's attack on southern Israel. Biden said Israel's security can rest on the United States, but right now it has more than the United States. It has the European Union, it has Europe, it has most of the world, but they're starting to lose that support by indiscriminate bombing that takes place. 18,000 people have been killed. 18,000 civilians. 50,000 have been wounded. You know, and if you look at the media, actually, you know what?
Don't.
No. Most people here, within the sound of our voices, you know, in the broadcast area in the United States, Long Island, you can't. You really can't. What we saw last night was really riveting. You know, we saw a young kid talking about how his father was humiliated by Israeli. I don't want to go into the details. They're too horrific. This kid was not an actor. This kid was a real kid. You see them all the time. Every time you look at the Gaza area, you see kids. Most of the people killed are kids. It's disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. But seeing that is something that we saw on Al Jazeera English. And then we switched over and watched The National on CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company, or corporation. And I realized those two channels, you don't get them here. You don't get them in the United States. You have to have basically sophisticated satellite gizmos to pull those in. So it's very likely that the only news you're getting are the views expressed on places like CNN, MSNBC, even Fox, which are basically all saying the same thing and showing only one side.
BBC's an exception. If you get
BBC.
If you get it.
Yeah, and if you get Euronews. And
some of it gets through as far as what isn't, just the framing of it is totally different. And consider that. Consider the overwhelming amount of messaging you're getting, and how it may seem like it's sort of one-sided.
It's completely one-sided.
Seek out other sources just to at least know what some of those scenes look like, the pictures.
And that's the important thing, you know, to know there's another side, to just listen to the other side. You don't have to agree with the other side. But if you just hear one side, you know, you're not basically understanding the entire story.
Yeah, and you really have to have a lot of I don't know. You have to search for it. You have to be diligent and really consider what it must be like. And I don't know. There's ways of critiquing the media and the things, the messaging here, or lack thereof, without falling into, you know, some of the misinformation and stuff. People just have to demand better coverage. I think people are really informed, people that read, people that that are academics and learning about this stuff, but it takes a little bit more than just sort of passively accepting whatever you're being told about the situation. The same sort of thing happened at the millennium and the turn of the century. Like, a lot of different news sources were basically saying the same thing about 9/11, and you would want to, you know, and especially the years after that, you had to find other sources to figure out what the assault from the U.S. was like and everything else.
Well, it's easy at the beginning. You know, if there's been a terrorist attack, it's easy to condemn that and to put your support behind those who were attacked. It gets a lot more complex when the reaction has played out and the future is being determined. And you have to ask yourself, is this just? Is this right? Is this the correct path to be going down? And also looking back, what caused that in the first place? And again, this is something that we seem to be blind to because we're not looking at the history. I'm not talking about ancient history, even ancient history of a couple of decades ago. I'm talking about within the last decade where basically Palestinians were cast aside by Trump and Netanyahu. And this is a direct result. And this is something that I don't know why Democrats aren't pointing to that. You know, they really aren't very good at defending themselves. Instead, somehow this is going to wind up to be Biden's fault, and Republicans are going to have the answers. No,
well,
Republicans caused this. There is no doubt about that. All you have to do is read a newspaper from a few years ago to see what happened, how people predicted this was going to be the result.
Biden is changing his support.
He's basically,
that's the story.
That's so. The difference between somebody who has one position and one position alone and somebody who changes with the times.
Well,
and
yeah,
that is Biden. That is what Biden does. And the times have changed within the last few weeks. And he's changing with them. And he's getting less and less patient with Netanyahu, somebody who does not change, somebody who has been preaching the same thing for a long, long time. And the only reason that this is continuing is so that he can stay out of prison, because he's corrupt as hell. All right, we don't have time to continue with all this, but that's just a taste of what's going on.
Well, you still have time.
We have time, but we have other things to talk about.
There's a lot of angles.
For instance, Brookhaven has just bought 33 acres of Pine Barrens in Manorville. That's good for preservation.
That's trees now.
Yeah. Basically, it's going to be preserved as open space for the public to use for walking and biking. They plan to pay $668,000 to purchase the tract from the Tyler J. Histan Family Trust. Which is great. Of course, you know, Pine Barrens are 106,000 acres altogether, so 33 acres isn't that much, but it's something. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. And Harry Histand is a member of the family that owns the property. Said his parents bought the land decades ago as an investment, but no one has ever lived there, just the deer, he said. And restrictions on Pine Barrens development make it impossible to build on the site. There's no reason to hold on to it, he said. It's stupid to pay property taxes on something you can't do nothing with. Well, Harry, you might be losing the land, but you're a true Long Islander, and we applaud you for that. And it'd be great to have a little bit more of the land preserved. So, hats off. All right, we had fun this last few days. We were in Manhattan, New York City. We did all kinds of adventurous things. Full confession, went to a Jets game. We were invited to a Jets game, and we kind of planned around that. And I wanted to see how mass transit worked going to New Jersey, going to the Meadowlands. And I'd say it worked quite well. You know, we took the LIRR from here and took that into Grand Central, which was nice. Had to switch, of course, because you can't go directly from Stony Brook. And And then a couple of days later, took the New Jersey Transit from Penn Station, got on something called the Meadowlands line, and took that right to the stadium.
Yeah, and that then just basically puts you in the one side of the stadium, and you walk around, find whatever activity you're doing to get in, and then situated with seats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really kind of a dreary day, as you would expect.
Oh, no. It was not a dreary day. It was one of those epic days.
Foreboding.
We started getting the warnings the night before. I got text messages from all kinds of places that you wouldn't expect to get text messages from. But the governor of New Jersey actually sent a text warning us to stay away or just not to go outside. And, of course, you know, in a football stadium, you are outside, especially that stadium because it doesn't have a dome. And you're not allowed to bring umbrellas in, so you're kind of forced to get wet. So we had to go looking for ponchos the night before because, you know, we've been through this before. A year earlier, we were also invited to a Jets game. It poured rain.
Yeah, we've been inducted into the whole poncho scene at the Jets games, uh-huh. which are basically a requirement because you have to be ready for the cold, but since we're not getting a lot of snow, I mean, it would have been really cool if it snowed, but you wouldn't have needed the rain gear.
You know how much I love snow, but I'm not sure if standing in snow coming down for 3 hours would have been that pleasant.
You would see your breath. It would be even more. I mean, it a little colder it would have done that, but the rain itself will make being in the cold and wind even worse unless you can keep it sort of suspended or away from you, and that's where this attire comes from.
Well, anyway, everybody was predicting this really dire series of events, 60-mile-an-hour winds, sustained rain that was going to dump 3 to 6 inches of rain on the ground, and it was really, I guess, a test of our commitment to even show up. And of course, you know, for football games, they have this thing called tailgating at the beginning, which starts at about 9 in the morning, where people just basically hang out in the parking lot and cook all kinds of things and have snacks and drinks. And it's fun. I think that's more fun than the game, actually.
Yeah, I think people really live for that aspect of football and just being there and seeing everyone before the game, getting ready and catching up. So I just like the atmosphere. It's a lot of people just getting together and
mm-hmm.
having a good time, focusing on the game.
Yeah.
You know, across, you know, you just are around so many people and young and old. It's a really interesting time and not a world I'm really involved in that
well,
much.
Me too. You know, I always feel kind of out of place.
Well, I don't know any of the rules, really.
I basically have a sense of how the game's supposed to work. But
right. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but...
But one thing, you know, when you're in a stadium watching a game, it's kind of hard sometimes to know what's going on because they're on the other side of the field. You can't really see them. You're watching the screen. And then, you know, wondering, why am I here? Why am I at home watching the same screen?
The screens are helpful.
They're very helpful.
There's a lot of information to just kind of give you the rudimentary understanding of where you're at.
But, you know, one thing that bugged me quite a bit was the announcer is, I mean, I don't know if people realize this, but he's a recording. Most of the time he's a recording. So whenever he says, Jets, first down, woo, you know, he does it the same way every time. It's obviously a recording, and yet people react to it as if he's doing it live. Now, okay, maybe that's part of how it works now. But and they have a live person there, too, because sometimes when something specific happens, somebody is saying that. But I think it should be all live, and, I just don't like seeing things turned into tape recordings that just keep getting repeated.
Yeah, the screens and the announcement system seem to have a lot of stuff that's programmatic, and they're even incorporating other things that are new, like animated GIFs that you would see in communications, uh-huh. like in chats and stuff, that are memes or things like that. So it's cool that they're kind of integrating stuff that's a little newer for, I guess, the newer audience. And I think they also had, like, regulars, which I think is one of the other really cool things about the team, the Jets in particular, because where we're at with the team, what I understand is that it's been a rough season. So when you go to a game like this, you're going to a game where people are, like, they're absolutely passionate. They want the team to win, but they understand, like, the, you know, it may not work out.
Although,
and,
you
and
know,
that is a sweet spot because people are there to have a good time.
Exactly, yes. And maybe a losing team is more endemic to fans that are fun to hang out with than a winning one. They won this game, and first of all, the whole first half was nothing but punting back and forth, so nobody got anything. But as soon as the second half began, the Jets started scoring and eventually won the game. So it was kind of a happy occasion as well as a wet one. Those ponchos really, really did help.
Well, we also had a win last time we were at a Jets game.
Well, I think you're the factor there, because I've been to three in my life total.
Okay.
I went to one the year before that, and they lost. They lost good. And last year they won with you, and it was raining then, too. This year, when we both went, they won again, and it rained again.
Well, I was taking it all in, but
you were getting
into
it.
You to know, I had my game face on
the whole time,
and... You know, I was just trying to follow the ball and keep up with what was going on. And, you know, people were standing up and, you know, really out of their seats the whole time. Because, again, you want your team to win. And it's so great when they do pull it out.
The seats were wet, too.
Yeah, the seats were wet.
That's why people were standing.
But my advice is to the Jets, if they're listening, if, you know, they just need to, it's all business. I think they're going down to Florida, you know, and... So, yeah, you got to get some more wins.
Well, you know...
no partying, just game.
Well, it may be mid-December, but they're not eliminated yet, even though I think they're, 5-8? No, they're not eliminated, but they probably are.
All right, well,
a lot of things are going to have to happen for this to work out.
The part where I don't watch.
Yeah, that's
right. And but we'll come back to it. Maybe we'll get someone.
But you really got into it.
I was
impressed. You were even part of the chant. You want to share the chant with us, Kyle? Because
This is a chant that definitely got my attention.
I would like. It's a little complex. How does it go? Just tell.
Don't patronize me.
Let's go.
It's J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Yeah.
That's it. So you spell the name of the team, and then you say the word that you spelled three times after you spell
it. It's very good for those learning how to spell, yes.
Let me see if I got this right. J-B...
No,
See, this is why I don't... Okay. J-E...
E.
T-S...
Yes.
All right, I'm lost.
No, you got then just Jets.
Jets, right, of course. Okay. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets,
Jets.
Jets.
No, too many Jets.
Too many Jets?
Well, you can sometimes.
Too many players on the field, you mean?
Or just three Jets. No, Jets.
Three Jets. Okay, so you spell it and then you just... Okay, you know what? Why? You can do better than this, Jets. I mean, you know... Even Let's Go Mets, that has more oomph to it. But
look,
you're just spelling the team and then saying what you spelled three times?
It's minimalist.
Who thought that up?
Somebody did.
All right, can I share something?
Please.
Other teams have chants, all right? Especially overseas with the other kind of football. You know, with the one where they actually do use their feet more than just once every few minutes. Can we just bring a couple of these up?
No. I heard that used as an insult. Someone said, what is this, soccer or something like that? Like,
you know, this sport should be called soccer because that sport is definitely football. You're using your feet. You can only use your feet and your head. So, you know what, I'm not going to get into that. I'll go the whole rest of the hour. But let's listen to a couple of other chants. I'll read what they're saying. River, tell me how it feels to have played in the second division. I swear that even as the years pass, that we are never going to forget.
you were in Division B. You burned down the monuments. This stain will never go away. Hey, chicken, you're a wimp. You punched a player. How cowardly are the Borrachos de Tablion? River, tell me how it feels. And then the chant repeats. That's a chant. Here's another one. Champions 67. In the heat of Lisbon. This is a Portuguese team. The fans came in their thousands to see the boys become champions 67. And then you repeat that. To arms. To arms. We are the Marseillais. And we will win. Come on, OM. Come on, OM. I don't think those are words. No one likes us. No one likes us. We don't care. We are Millwall. Super Millwall. We are Millwall from the den. No one likes us. No one likes us. We don't care. We are Millwall. Super Millwall. Millwall from the den. You know what? I like Millwall. That's the team I support from now on. They got chutzpah for sure. That's a chant, Kyle. Those are chants. Okay. That's how you do it. J-E-T-S. No, Jets. Give me a break.
So first of all, there's variations. They do some things when certain players.
Oh, really? Tell me the variations.
Say their names in various ways, uh-huh, or uh-huh. They have catchphrases. There are other catchphrases that are used, like, that's a Jets first down, they say that.
That's the recording saying that.
Is that what it is?
That's the guy on the PA who's okay, not so even that, there saying...
That gets said like a chant when you're walking around, you hear it.
It gets said when they get a first down. That's all that is.
Okay, I missed that. That's exactly what you're talking about. Okay, so
it's like saying Big Ben is a chant, you know?
Okay, so they could have more... verbose chanting, but my caution is that when you get these that are, you know, edgy and boisterous,
mm-hmm,
think about the kind of football culture that breeds. You got real hooliganism, and that is a problem in that sport.
Are you saying the people I just played, they were very polite, they were very calm.
I am serious here.
Chanting there.
That some of this can get extreme quickly.
Yes.
And I think the mildness, even for the NFL's sake, for our own setting, it actually begets a more approachable stadium and game. And you know, there is drinking, there is, you know, people letting loose. But I also, what I really like is that people bring a lot of their hectic craziness, like their messed up, stressed out lives to the game to forget about. And the atmosphere there, by the time you're like a quarter or two in, people are dancing that don't normally let loose like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supported. They're in an environment that is goofy and silly. There's a lot of fun stuff that somehow is brought out. I think part of that is people are bringing families, and that kind of keeps the adults responsible and policing other kind of rude adults.
Right.
And I think that's really, really important, mm-hmm, especially when times are crazy. You want people to focus on the game and come out with a win. And everybody have a good time and live through it, you know?
It's the Jets, so the win isn't necessarily something that's doable, but in this case it was, and that was great, but it's, I think, as you say, just going out there with family, having a good time, and just sharing the event with other people. And that was something that I really got out of it. It was a very open and welcoming crowd, And, you know, I felt out of place, and I realized, why do we feel out of place at events like that? You know, these are our people as much as they are anyone else's people. We should be able to have conversations and share experiences like this. You know, most people I know will simply say, yeah, I would never do that. And I might have been one of those people that said that at one point. Ask yourself why. You know, looking down upon these things, you kind of cut yourself off from a lot of people that are good people and that you have things in common with. And maybe focus on the things you have in common with before you get to the things you might disagree with. You know, here I am thinking a football game is going to have a lot of Trump people at it. Why do I think that? Why do I think Trump people gravitate towards this more than anyone else? And does thinking that make it happen where basically, you know, people like me stay away and people who support something I don't support go there and get stronger and more unified as a result? Doesn't sound like a smart thing to just stand back and watch happen. I think getting involved is important. Interacting is important. Meeting people from other backgrounds is super important. And going to events that you might not have chosen to go to on your own, yeah, you know, that's how you have new experiences. And we learned a heck of a lot doing this. It was fun. It was definitely fun. Not our thing, but still fun.
Oh, totally, totally. And it opens your eyes. You just realize this is such a huge, huge audience for this game. And I hear so many knowledgeable people.
Oh, boy, they know so much.
Yeah, yeah.
they have all these stats in their heads and you know, nuances. It's not just reciting figures. It's interpretation. It's, you know, all kinds of I mean, you know, I say, boy, if you only, you know, thought this much about some other thing, but, you know, who am I to say one thing is more important than another? If you have a passion for something, show that passion. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway.
Well, now, we talked about chance, and I might have disrespected the Jets' chance a little bit, but I am very impressed by the caliber of some of the fans' performances. We saw on the big screen all kinds I wish they showed this on television. This is what happens when they go to commercials. On the big screen, they show things like Awkward Dad Dance, who got his whole family involved somehow, and it was just super good and well thought out and choreographed, and I just wonder, how do they do that? How do they even know they're on camera? And all kinds of other people. The guy who really stood out, though, was the fireman. In fact, I looked him up. His name is Fireman Ed.
Fireman Ed.
Been going there for years. This guy wears a fireman hat, completely bald, and he basically is able to quiet the entire crowd down just by lowering his hands slowly. Everybody's watching the screen, and the entire stadium falls silent until...
J-E-T-S, Jets, yeah.
Well, no, until he raises his hand.
Oh, yeah, until he raises
right.
his hand. What? I don't know.
You skipped a step there.
Why are you telling me to say it?
You know, he's running a whole stadium.
I can't read your mind.
I asked you. You were there. It's the same thing.
What is this, a test? Well,
yes, it was exactly. So basically, that's why we're not on the big screen. So he raises his hands and the whole place erupts. And he does this like five times in a row. In fact, he kept doing it even after the players resumed play. They were still doing that.
That's the most powerful thing.
That's how important he is.
And that really is like a lot of the examples you just played.
Mm-hmm.
Because imagine, not just as the audience member, it really is an amazing sound and experience, but as a player or the other team, that's where that stuff is incredible. Because if you're about to start a play or something, and you have this entire stadium in unison chanting your team name, like to set things off, and what that must be like as the opposing team, that's incredible. And that's what those other ones are like. And I think that's where, like, people who might come with a game face and they're not really into it, maybe they had a rough week or something, then, you know, things turn around and, mm-hmm. and some scores get in there. It gets louder and louder, and
yeah.
especially
it's
when those are there.
It's therapeutic, for sure. And, you know, that kind of power, just basically controlling an entire stadium full of people. Wow, I wasn't expecting that. And apparently, That happened last year, too. You noticed him last year. I didn't notice
him. He was
him
on the other side. I think he is has a regular spot, basically,
yeah, of course,
and is a part of a lot of the sort of tradition. People that are just, they're icons there. They're like fixtures
mm-hmm.
of the team. And that, like I said, that diehard fan spirit that that keeps everybody entertained in between of during those television breaks and other parts of the game.
Anyway, that was our Sunday going out to Meadowlands and seeing that and experiencing something that we're not used to. And we took the train back. That certainly is fun. New Jersey Transit is different. They have a different ticketing system. It's a little weird. I'm very, very impressed by how mass transit in the New York area has evolved over the last few years, where basically everything can be done on an app. You know when trains are going to be there. You know when buses are going to be there. And it's a lot more efficient than it used to be. Of course, some of the trains still seem to be from the 1950s. I'm talking about some New Jersey Transit trains. There was one in particular after the game we were on where apparently you can press the buzzer. There's a buzzer that conductors use, but some fan was able to find it and kept pressing it while we were stuck waiting for an Amtrak to go by. And the conductor was getting on the intercom saying, if you don't stop doing that, we're going to call the police and they'll be waiting for you at Penn Station. And whoever it was kept doing it, and conductors could do nothing about it, and it was really getting tense. It went on for about 15 minutes. So, yeah, that you have episodes like that. That was a bit of fun.
I'm really interested in just seeing a lot of those older trains. They will disappear, and newer subway cars, the open gangway design will be, like, more ever-present
mm-hmm.
In the future. It would be more
I don't know about
visible.
New Jersey Transit, but, yeah, hopefully they'll... Well, I mean, I like the old trains, I do, but...
On the whole system. Yeah, it seems like they're all over still just the backbone, like the workhorse of the system, but seeing new things here and there, just in the right ways, like strategic stuff, it's exciting.
Overall, though, there's a lot we didn't talk about. We spent several days in the city just wandering around. I love New York. It is incredible. The mood there is just so fantastic. If you read New York Post or Daily News headlines saying, oh, everyone's living in fear, there's crime and human excrement on the street, it's nonsense. Yeah, you know, a city of 8 million people, you can find bad things. Yeah, bad things happen. But the vast, vast majority is so positive and optimistic and healthy. And, we must have walked around for hours every single day. You get so much exercise in the city. Don't avoid it. It's incredible. An incredible place. No matter what part you go to, explore and interact with people. You won't regret it. One more thing, as we go out, there's something I just been gnawing at me. During the game, they sang the Sweet Caroline song.
Oh, no, you're not.
Who screwed that song up? Okay. Neil Diamond doesn't understand it. I don't understand it. We're going to go out with the song as it was recorded. There's no bump, bump, bump in there. There's no chant of so good, so good. No, that's not how it goes. This is how it goes. It's a good song, too. For God's sake, people, appreciate something as long as you have it.
Absolutely.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for chatting.
Bye.
So long.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong.
Such a good song.
Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen so good.
Don't chant.
Look at the night, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? One, touching one, reaching out, touching me, touching.
So much better without messing with it. Don't you agree, Carl?
Yeah, leave it.
So next time, folks, don't chant along with this song when the lyrics don't exist in the first place.
Yeah, it's an instrument. It's a horn.
Yes, appreciate it. Good night.